Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this Honorable Court.
Thank you. Please be seated.
This morning, the court has three causes on its oral submission docket. They are Southwestern Electric Power Company versus Murray Grant from Ross County, MD Anderson Cancer Center and others versus Henry J. Novak from Travis County, and Riau Bank versus Topic Al Gahani from Harris County. In each of these causes, the court is allotted 20 minutes for each side to present oral argument. The petitioner may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by advising the marshal of the court. We will take a recess in between each argument and will complete the arguments before noon. These arguments are being recorded by our clerk, and you may purchase a tape of any argument for a nominal fee by making application with our clerk. Court is ready to hear argument from petitioner in Southwestern versus Grant.
May it please the court, Mr. Bill Church will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. As the Texas PUC pointed out in the brief it submitted last week, this case is the sequel to the court's 1999 decision in O'Shawn. In O'Shawn, this court recognized the PUC's power to adopt tariff-based limitations of liability. The question presented here is whether the PUC can limit a utility's liability for personal injury damages. California and Florida, the only states with reported decisions addressing this precise issue, have both held that utility commissions have this power. Texas should join California and Florida in upholding narrowly drawn, carefully reasoned limitations of liability for personal injury damage.
Why is this narrowly drawn and carefully reasoned?
It is narrowly drawn, Your Honor, because the limitation of liability only applies to a unique fact circumstance, which is liability that arises from voltage fluctuations in the delivery of power. It also only applies within the wiring of the customer's home. There are numerous other situations. Most of the situations a utility faces in its day-to-day operations are not limited in any respect.
So for those other things, if the utility is negligent and causes personal injury to somebody, you're not saying in those other situations that the utility could not be potentially liable?
No, Justice Abbott. We agree with the PUC that this is a very limited situation in which there's no liability for negligence. The general rule is that the utility remains liable for its negligence.
And can you be a little bit more clear on exactly where you draw that line for the types of instances for which utility would not be liable for personal injury?
For personal injury, to a large extent, it is limited to situations where the injury occurs past the point of delivery on the customer's premises. If you look at a house, and this is a residential situation, there's a point of delivery generally just past the meter at which the utility ceases to be responsible for the electrical apparatus. Everything past the meter is something that the customer has installed, that the customer has a repairman come repair whenever it needs work. The utility is not responsible for coming into the customer's home, inspecting their circuit breakers, their junction boxes, their outlets. That is all something that every customer in the state calls an electrician to handle for themselves. The utility's responsibility in terms of the services it provides basically goes up to the point of delivery, as I've said, which is just outside the meter box.
Are we required to review the limitation of liability in this tariff for reasonableness?
No, I don't believe you are.
Why not?
I believe that that's an impermissible collateral attack on a 20-year-old rate-making decision. This court has the ability to review the reasonableness of tariff provisions, but it does so on direct appeal. And when it does so, its standard of review is limited to a deferential standard of arbitrary and capriciousness.
Here, in the in the hearing at which that occurred, it appeared that the hearing examiner was accepting that the utilities agreed that the PUC had jurisdiction at the outset to determine the initial reasonableness of the limitation, but with the notion that courts on a case-by-case basis would determine whether or not it was reasonable with respect to the particular facts of the case. And that's how the examiner was looking at it. But is it your position that the examiner and the utilities were wrong at that time, that once the PUC determines that it's reasonable, the only attack can be as a part of that initial determination, and there is no case-by-case review of the reasonableness of the tariff with respect to a particular incident that occurred?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that's accurate. In 1981, when this particular PUC decision was initially made, the PUC was a relatively new body. It had been created in 1975, and I believe it became active in 1977. At that point, we had a series of cases that this course addressed and criticized in O'Shan, including the Bulmer decision, the Reeves decision, and the Calarco decision, all of which held that PUC decisions as to the reasonableness of tariff terms should be resubmitted on a case-by-case ad hoc basis to juries for reconsideration. As the cases from other states have recognized, particularly a Second Circuit decision that we've cited, the Wegoland decision, and as this court recognized in O'Shan, and as the United States recently reaffirmed in the Central Office Telephone decision, it is not appropriate to allow these collateral attacks to take place. The filed rate doctrine demands a certain element of finality and certainty as to what the rate is while it's in place.
So if that is the case, what O'Shan, I guess the way you pronounce it, I'll accept that. So our statement in O'Shan that we looked at that tariff and we decided that it was reasonable on its face, well, what do we mean by that? Why did we find it necessary to look at the tariff in O'Shan and determine that it was reasonable on its face as a part of the determination of the factor, as opposed to simply holding that to attack the reasonableness of a tariff, you must do so in the original rate making. It is not to be considered as an issue in any particular case.
I believe that in O'Shan it would have been perfectly appropriate for this court to have ruled that that was an impermissible collateral attack on the filed tariff. It was also acceptable for the court to go a step further and say that on its face, the rule appears to be valid, and we will not undertake any more of a review of the tariff than that.
Well, I'm not sure of the second part of the analysis that you just said. What do you mean, look at it on its face to determine if it's valid? Why is it that inconsistent with your position that you cannot undertake a collateral attack? Isn't that a collateral attack?
I believe that it is a certain level of collateral attack, and I believe that the more appropriate treatment would have been to say that we're not going to look at it. A customer, as the Second Circuit recognized in Wegoland, really is not permitted to come in and attempt to veto 20 years worth of rate-making treatment. As the Second Circuit pointed out, that customer's remedy and the rest of the remedy of all similarly situated ratepayers is to participate in the PUC's proceedings. This has come up again. As the PUC pointed out, for the past year, they have been dealing with this very issue. As the PUC also points out in its brief, there have been dockets initiated at the PUC solely intended to examine the reasonableness of various tariff provisions. At that point, the PUC will consider the arguments made. There will be participation by a great number of interested parties who aren't here for this collateral attack. The PUC staff, the Office of Public Counsel, the Consumers Union, the Texas Ratepayers Organization, the Texas Legal Services Center, all of which participated in the recent rulemaking proceeding. At that point, there will come, as there has come now, a final order, a new rule, a pro forma tariff, which, if participants feel is appropriate, they will be free to challenge on direct appeal. on direct appeal, a very deferential, arbitrary, and capriciousness standard will be applied to reviewing the PUC's balancing of the facts and factors leading to its conclusion that the limitation of liability was reasonable.
To reach where you want to go, do we have to explain O'Shan or correct it in any way?
I believe that it would be appropriate for the court to clarify that it did not intend to encourage collateral attacks on approved tariffs by suggesting that there is a new standard of facial reasonableness. At the same time, I don't believe that that's necessary in this case. In this case, it can just be pointed out that the tariff is facially reasonable and the collateral attack is not permissible.
I have another question. This Court of Appeals is not the first court to make reference to the UCC affecting this tariff. And, in fact, in O'Shan, we cite to a case that makes reference in particular to the fact that personal injuries were not involved in that case, and therefore they didn't have to address the UCC effect on a tariff that limited liability for personal injuries. Yet, that appeared to be the basis for this CA's opinion, and is there some quick answer on why you all don't think that's important to even look at?
Yes, there is. There's about 50 years of history as to why that analysis is improper. The UCC analysis makes two fundamental assumptions that ignore the difference between a comprehensively regulated industry and a non-regulated industry. The first is that the limitation of liability, that liability is necessary to encourage safe operation. The other is that there is an inherent inequality or unequal bargaining power between the ratepayer and its utility. Those are the two assumptions that this Court of Appeals has made in articulating its argument that if this were a UCC-type situation, well, the limitation of liability...
No, it doesn't make any sort of assumption. It just says this is the tariff substitutes as a contract between the customer and the seller. We've said that electricity is a good. UCC says when you're selling a good, you can't exculpate yourself from your negligence for personal injuries. It's unconscionable. Prima facie, and therefore burden switch. Is your argument that because there's a regulatory body that has approved this tariff, that therefore the UCC does not apply?
The UCC articulates these two reasons that I've just described as its basis for determining that limitations of personal injury liability are prima facie unconscionable. The United States Supreme Court, in its 1950s decision in Southwestern Sugar and Molasses, addressed both of those points and recognized that that sort of analysis is not appropriate in a comprehensively regulated industry for two reasons. The first being that the regulatory agency acts as a complete substitute for normal market powers. Indeed, the Texas Utility Code in section 31.001B expressly states that legislation, that the regulation provided under the code is intended to fully substitute for normal market forces. At the commission, we are not dealing with a situation where the utility is negotiating with its customers directly. The utility is debating with its customers, industrial, residential, the PUC staff, the Office of Public Counsel, as to the merits of every single tariff term, and then that debate is decided by the commission, which is statutorily charged with protecting ratepayer interests and utility interests.
Suppose that the Public Utility Act does not... The Public Utility Act assigns specifically the task of PUC to set rates. Suppose that the implication of that is that they can determine sources of liability and limits of liability. But let's suppose the legislature makes a specific pronouncement that in the sale of goods, it is prima facie unconscionable
to limit your liability for personal injuries. Do we have to confront a specific pronouncement of the public policy of the state on the sale of goods versus an implication of a power to the PUC to limit certain liabilities?
I believe that the legislature has essentially answered that question for us. We are not talking about a brand new concept here. The PUC first limited liability for personal injury damages in 1981. Since then, the Texas Utilities Code has been codified as...
You assume they have, but in O'Shan, we cite a number of cases pro and con on limits of liability, and only one of those cited dealt with personal injuries. Virtually all of them dealt with economic damages, which the UCC specifically says you can. You can exculpate yourself for liability for economic damages. But we don't have a lot of law out there talking about personal injuries.
I believe that's right. I believe that's because most customers who have read the tariff and read the cases in Texas addressing the duty that is thought to be created here have recognized that the tariff does effectively bar the claim. There is no such duty and have not proceeded on with litigation resolving that. My point, however, is that the Texas legislature has had 20 years and several opportunities in which it has considered the scope of utility regulation to address that point if they thought it was a conflict, if they thought that the limitation of liability for personal injury damages was unwise. They have not done that. And several of the cases that are cited in the briefing have made exactly that point in confirming that these sorts of limitations of liability are consistent with public policy, that they have survived legislation.
Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May I please the court? Mr. Joe Rosenfield will present argument from the respondent.
May it please the court. The issue that has been brought to your attention this morning on the issue of reasonableness of the tariff and how it should be addressed by this court is an issue of prime importance and one that I don't believe has been addressed in terms of the issue of personal injury. The issue of reasonableness of the tariff, I believe, can be addressed on a case-by-case basis. I don't believe it's something that needed to be addressed at the hearings before the Public Utility Commission, and I believe that the when the 20 years ago, when the tariff was passed in 1981 in the application of Central Power and Light Company, it was clear at that time in that particular tariff that they provided for consideration of personal injury. I believe in the tariff that was presented back in 1981, it said the company will not be liable for damages as part of that tariff. It said it won't be liable for damages beyond its control, but the company, in the event of a valid claim, shall be liable for injuries to the person, death or repair of, and replacement of electrical equipment. It was addressed at that time, and it was an issue that I think has, over a period of time, disappeared in tariffs that have been passed by the Public Utility Commission.
Well, if your position, Mr. Rosenfield, is that courts should be reviewing these tariffs for reasonableness on a case-by-case basis, what is the test for reasonableness and how should a court review a tariff on a case-by-case basis for reasonableness?
Well, I believe the way that could happen, Your Honor, is that that on a case-by-case basis, as far as the language of the tariff itself, what it provides for, whether or not it allows for the claims that an individual may have for damages for injuries, and I believe
so,
it does.
I mean, it's just per se unreasonable if it factors any limitation of liability for any type of claim, be it economic loss or personal injury. Is that? I mean, I just want to. What would make a tariff reasonable? A limitation of liability in a tariff reasonable, and what would make one unreasonable?
Well,
how would we review it?
I believe that the court would be obligated to review the tariff in terms of what it provides for, what the terms are of that particular tariff, and then to determine whether or not it would allow for a standard that could be interpreted by the court as being reasonable. And
now,
I think
so does that mean if there is a limitation of liability and an individual would be precluded from bringing a personal injury claim, then you would have a court decide that that is unreasonable on its face? So therefore, what you're asking us to do is not decide on a case-by-case basis, but just make the determination that limitations of liability for personal injuries in rate tariffs are unreasonable.
Unreasonable per se, and I believe
in all cases.
In all cases. And
okay, well, that's a little bit different than at coming in and saying on a case-by-case basis, a court should make a determination whether the tariff is unreasonable as to that particular case.
And if, in fact, the court is not willing to take that position, and I understand that it's that it's unreasonable per se, then I think the law that's been in effect since 1981 would allow this court to take, or a court, to take the issue of reasonableness on a case-by-case
and
basis.
And that's my question. How do we review it for reasonableness? What is the test? A broad public policy considerations? I'm not sure as a judge what you're asking me to do.
Well, I believe the court would have to consider the broad public policy consideration of whether it's a conscionable or unconscionable proposition that's being presented to the court.
What would make it unconscionable? Because it's a large claim versus a small claim? Because of the particular conduct at issue, what is it that would make it unreasonable?
The ability of the individual to recover, the amount of ability of an individual to recover based upon what would be prohibited from them from recovering under the statute.
So now we're back to the per se unreasonableness if there's a limitation of liability.
Correct, Your Honor.
So there really is no case-by-case way of reviewing this. You're asking us just to say per se unreasonable when a limitation of liability is contained in a tariff.
Of course, I would ask that the court consider it on an unreasonable basis per se. If the court is unwilling to do that, then I think there's an option there for it to be considered on a case-by-case
basis. Well, and that's what I'm asking you. I don't understand your option. I'm trying to get with you on the same page so that I can understand what you mean when you say case-by-case basis. Every time we talk about it, you take me back to per se unreasonable. And I'm not quite sure as a judge what you're asking me to do on a case-by-case basis in judging whether a tariff is reasonable or not.
If, in fact, the amount that an individual can recover, if the remedy that an individual has on a situation when they're faced with the enforcement of a tariff, if, in fact, they're in a situation where they have to defend themselves against the terms of the tariff, I believe that the court can look at the tariff itself and determine, based upon that it may be unreasonable based upon the amount of recovery that an individual may have in accordance to the terms of the tariff, based upon the ability of the individual to be able to defend themselves, to presume that they could defend themselves against the terms of that tariff, and as to the amount of damages and the responsibility of the company in terms of the tariff. If the tariff itself precludes liability, doesn't put any responsibility upon the utility company to take any action to prevent an injury from occurring. The utility company can simply rely upon the terms of the tariff. And it's my position that on a case-by-case basis, a court has to look at what those issues are
in order to make
a determination.
How do you make that damages determination? I mean, there's a million-dollar damage claim here. And how does the court decide what becomes small, what's large? How do you make that determination? It seems like that leads you down a road that could give you an absurd result.
I understand. It's completely, Justice, completely different than the issue of Aushon. Aushon, I think this court considered and concerned itself with the fact of what happens when we have a large power outage and it affects maybe hundreds or thousands of people. Who's going to bear that responsibility?
But where do you draw that line? Here you've got quite a large claim for $1 million. And, it does start aggregating. You can have very large claims. How do we make that qualitative decision?
Well, of course, one of the main ways to look at it is look at how the claim is brought. claim is brought by an individual as opposed to a group of people on behalf of other people that may have been similarly situated. But in any event, in a situation as far as personal injuries are concerned, I believe it was discussed in the grant opinion that the ability of trying to determine one of the reasonableness standards, the reasonableness standard of being able to insure yourself against such a loss. When you're talking about property damage, an individual may be in a better position to understand what may happen as far as a property loss is concerned. In a personal injury case, the individual is probably not in the same position as as a company may be for economic damages. And I think it's very clear that there's a difference between the two. And as far as the amount of the damages are concerned, of course, the suit may have been for a large amount of money, as you have indicated. But as far as recovery under those situations, the actual recovery may be somewhat different.
So are we to wait until the jury has decided the amount of recovery and then review for reasonableness?
Oh, no.
I don't understand how we evaluate reasonableness based upon the damages scenario that you've proposed.
Well, as far as the damage issue is concerned, as far in a personal injury situation, it appears to me that that this court would be able to establish whether or not a tariff would be reasonable, and therefore an individual would be able to pursue their claim for damages at the time that the case is filed. And the amount of damages that you are talking about, how do you make that determination? I believe it's different as to the type of fund.
Well, you said in your brief that you think that the question of reasonableness should be a factual determination. And I think I'm hearing you say now that it's something the court should decide as a matter of law.
Again, as I spoke over here, sure, I believe that it is, per se, it should be declared unreasonable. This court should be able to determine the reasonableness of the tariff per se. If you can't do that, if you're unwilling to do that, then I believe the law allows you, and the cases that have been proceeded over the last 20 years allow you to proceed on a case-by-case basis.
Well, but when you say case-by-case basis, it sounds like what you're talking about is not about a legal determination of whether it's reasonable as applied to this particular case. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
So then it's not a factual determination, as you stated in your brief, because we can't determine facts.
That's correct. It would be a legal issue that would have to be determined.
Mr. Rosenfield, would you respond to Mr. Church's argument that we shouldn't be looking at reasonableness at all, that in fact it's a collateral attack and this was a matter that should have been raised on direct appeal of the PUC's original rate determination?
My first statement would be the fact that the individual being able to appear before the Public Utility Commission and to bring that issue to the forefront. Well, the individual probably is not in the position to do that, but more importantly than that, from a legal basis, it appears that the issue of reasonableness is an issue that should be able to be attacked on a case-by-case basis and not something that was a direct attack on the PUC ruling when the tariff was first established.
What if the consumer group had attacked the reasonableness of the tariff and said, as a matter of law, when you limit liability for personal injuries, this is unreasonable, and had taken that up through a court of appeals, and the court had said, generically, no, we don't find this tariff to be unreasonable, would that bind subsequent customers?
Oh, I think that it would. I think that I believe so. I believe that the court of appeals indicated that it wasn't reasonable based upon the law.
And it was reasonable.
In the
appeal of the tariff itself, in the appeal of when the tariff was approved, let's assume this consumer group had said, we don't think limitations of liability for personal injury are, they're void against public policy, they're unreasonable. And that had been appealed to a court of appeals, and the court had said, no, we approve this tariff, it's not unreasonable. What would be the effect of that determination?
Well, the effect of that determination would probably prevent the individual from
the individual is not a party. This was just
I understand that. It would prevent the individual from being able to have a claim in court, and I don't believe that that would be the intent of the law, and I believe that the individual should be able to pursue their claim. And if at the beginning, if they determined that it was a reasonable tariff, if they determined that it was reasonable, and that the issue or the ability of the individual to address that issue to get reprieve for any injury received wouldn't be allowed. They wouldn't be able to do that. And my position that the individual ought to be able to pursue their cause of action based upon the unreasonableness of that provision. And how would anybody ever be able to attack that provision? 20 years ago at a meeting
That's my hypothetical. Suppose it was attacked 20 years ago.
I understand.
It took it all the way up to the court system, and the court said it's not unreasonable, it's not against public policy. What would be the effect of those determinations?
Well, I believe if they determined that it was not unreasonable, is that what I'm understanding you to say? That it was not unreasonable, it would prevent the individual from being able to pursue their claim. Prevent the individual from being able to do that. Except, I believe that, again, it takes us back to whether or not the courts will allow the attack on the reasonableness of that tariff on a case-by-case basis.
Ms. Rosebill, let me change your direction a little bit. One of the arguments also raised by Southwestern Electric is that there's no duty here, that the duty is established by the tariff and the rate that's, and consequently plays into the rate making. And I'm not talking about the limitation on liability. I'm talking about the duty. The duty here is to provide, I guess, a steady supply of uninterrupted supply of electricity, which has been met here. The court seems to imply that there's a fact issue about whether there's some other duty out there with respect to the condition of the premises to which the electricity is supplied. The argument of SWEPCO is that if they provide the uninterrupted supply of electricity to the premises, that's the end of the duty required by the tariff. And if the court were to impose a requirement or liability for an electric surge that surges throughout the house and shocks somebody from an appliance on the inside of the house, they actually are affecting the nature of the tariff duty and, as a result, affecting the nature of the rate making. How do you respond to that?
Well, I believe, based upon the law as it's in existence at this time, that the utility has a duty, and the duty is to exercise proper precaution to prevent and to anticipate and to prevent injuries to its customers. And if you consider that to be the duty,
the duty is not to provide an uninterrupted supply of electricity, but the duty is to not provide electricity in the event it comes in the event the premises to which they are being provided are no longer safe.
That's exactly right, and they also have the ability. And they have the ability, should they have wanted to do so, which was in the in the briefs provided to the court or before this court, they could have cut off the electricity to the property. They could have terminated the electricity to the property until such time as it would have been safe. Would have prevented any kind of injuries.
And that's set forth in the tariff, an obligation to disconnect electricity from a customer. They determine there is some sort of obligation on the tariff to disconnect customers that they think don't deserve electricity.
I believe they have that ability to do so, yes, sir.
Based on what?
And the tariff itself of SWEPCO says, in a like manner should the customer's premises be rendered wholly unfit for the continued operation of the customer's plant or business. Due to any of the causes mentioned above, it continues to say, thereupon the service can be suspended.
The reason I ask is because you know as well as I do that the moment they terminate service, they will then be hit with a claim. So what you're suggesting is, heads they lose, tails they lose. They can either cut it off and have a claim or not cut it off.
Exactly right. Either ability, they probably would have had a claim. You're probably right. But they might have prevented the injury.
You know, speaking of the injury, and you're running short of time, I'm very curious about exactly how this happened. Where did this bolt come from?
Well, evidently what happened, Your Honor, based upon the facts as I understand of the case, we have
what do you mean that you understand them?
Well, the actual facts of the case itself.
Okay. You are the lawyer representing the plaintiff.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
All right. So, what does the evidence show about exactly how this person got hit with the bolt?
We have an electrical problem. Lights going from bright to dim. smelling of smoke of the appliances, calling the power company to come out and check it out. Power company pulls the, checks the voltage and says there's not a problem. Asks my client to call her electrician, which she does. She calls the electrician. He said he comes and he checks the wires of the house.
How about the exact incident?
The exact incident was the following Monday, 2 days after the power problem. She's had problems with her appliances. She contacts the power company, who indicates they'll send someone to fix the appliances. By 5 o'clock that day, they didn't send anybody. She calls them, and they said, you need to take your appliances to be fixed. She disconnects. She says she doesn't want to. She's afraid of being injured, but she disconnects the appliances. She takes them one at a time, puts them on a table in her kitchen, and at some time, as she's walking by those appliances, either from an electrical appliance, from a plug on the wall at face height, it's not down on the floor, or from an electrical switch on the wall, a streak of some kind of electricity comes and strikes her in the face and causes the injuries when she suffered. So that's how she was actually injured 2 days after the problem with the electrical wire had been fixed.
And that would be an injury resulting, if it came from the TV, you would concede you would have no claim against SWEPCO.
That's probably true, and unless there was any connection or tying between the damage to the appliance and
so
the injury,
if
but that's probably true.
If it came from the light switch or the electrical plug, that would be the basis of your claim.
Absolutely.
And here's my question.
Yes.
Would that not be a claim that clearly falls within the parameters of the tariff because it would relate to the voltage?
It would fall within the yes, the answer to your question is yes. It would fall within the parameters of the tariff. And then again, that takes us back to whether that tariff is reasonable or unreasonable, and how do you attack the reasonableness of the tariff. And then how it applies to a claim for personal injuries, which this court didn't address in the Oshon decision. And in fact, the Mr. Church is correct. What's going on with the deregulation of the utility industry is we're unregulating part of the industry, which will then bring us back to the issue of reasonableness and the and whether or not the tariff should be enforced.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Church, Mr. Rosenfield, in answer to my question about the duty issue, says that the tariff permits the electric company to discontinue electricity service to premises it deems unfit. Now, your argument is that they don't have a duty to inspect premises to make that determination, but isn't there an implication in the tariff that there is some sort of obligation on their part not to provide electricity to a premises that obviously is incapable of receiving it?
I think there is a difference between a premises that's incapable of receiving it and the utility having the right under the tariff to decide whether a particular structure, business, apartment is unsafe and it's inappropriate for them to deliver electricity to that. There are numerous cases that have been decided not based on limitation of liability but based on this duty issue, holding that there is no such duty under the tariff to inspect or to not deliver electricity if there is some reason to suspect that there may be a broken piece of equipment, an exposed wire, or something on the customer premises. You've got the Romero decision, the Texaco decision, the Cisneros decision, and the Sisson versus Texas-New Mexico decision, all basically recognizing that the utility has no liability, has no responsibility, has no ability to go in and inspect each customer's premises, make some sort of determination that is either safe or unsafe, and then decide not to provide power.
You mentioned at the start of your opening argument that this was a narrow and limited exception. Is there, what if the tariff completely cut off any liability by the utility company for anything it did, would that be any different?
What that would affect is the enforceability of the PUC's decision when it came up on direct appeal.
But if it got by direct appeal, for whatever reason, it wasn't challenged. Nefarious reason or just incompetence. Our hands are tied under your theory, aren't they? So it really doesn't matter whether it's narrow or broad. That's just something that's him.
I will say that under my reading of the United States Supreme Court's filed rate decisions and under the Court of Appeals, Federal Court of Appeals, and the various state decisions applying the filed rate doctrine, yes, I believe, unfortunately, your hands are tied until somebody takes that back, works it back through the process, and brings a direct appeal.
When you say takes it back, you mean institutes a new agency procedure?
Exactly, and there are several ways that that could happen. I have to differ with my adversary. Individuals do frequently participate in proceedings at the PUC, and often they are very effective advocates for their position. They do institute dockets to question utility rate making rules and tariffs. That's the appropriate posture here. And this isn't a situation where the PUC has made a blanket limitation of liability. The PUC carefully considered at least 10 factors that we discuss in our brief as to why this was an appropriate and narrow situation in which to limit liability for personal injury damages.
Are there very many personal injury claims like this?
I think the dearth of reported decisions establishes that either there are not very many of them, or most customers and lawyers who read the tariff believes that it means what it says. So I can't answer that question. But I suspect that there are not that many. I suspect that if there were very many serious injuries that were coming into conflict, we'd have more people like Mr. Rosenfeld
question. Maybe more as a result of the duty rather than the limitation. Maybe more people don't ordinarily sue when they get shocked by an appliance, the electric utility that hooked their house up to electricity.
And again, that goes back to something I said at the beginning and something that Mr. Rosenfeld omitted from his discussion of the record on appeal. As we noted, the utility is only responsible for getting the electricity at the point of delivery. The home builder, the home owner, then constructs everything that happens after the meter, the circuit breakers, the wiring inside the house. They install the appliances. They maintain the appliances. And what's notably missing from his discussion of the record is that she did call out an electrician to come to her house and determine whether the problem was on her side of the wiring or not. That electrician determined that there was a voltage fluctuation caused by the tree limb on CPNL's power, on SWEPCO's power line. The limb was removed. The constant flow of electricity was restored. The question that's unanswered is why that electrician, when he was there, didn't secure these appliances, evaluate her wiring as the tariff says she had the duty.
So it's your view then, any duty for SWEPCO stops at the meter?
That's the way the tariff
defines it. They have to show something that happened from the meter going away from the home that caused either property or personal injury.
That is the tariff's definition. It's also the definition of the duties in those Texas Court of Appeals decisions.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the first case. The court will take a brief recess.
All rise.